Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Radio Show. I'm Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
I'm Alan Harrop.
And I'm State Representative Steve Tyson.
Thank you for joining us, Steve.
Steve, the state legislature recently passed its budget for the coming, is it for the coming year?
Yes, that'll be for actually going back to July the 1st of this year, and it'll go, it's actually a biennium budget, so it's for 2 years.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about what's in there? And
I would be delighted to. Let me kind of start off by kind of how it's all developed. Okay. So the way the process starts is, I think the leadership, probably the Speaker of the House, the Speaker pro tem of the Senate, and probably some other senior leaders, they get together with the financial whiz-bang kids in the that work for the legislature, you know, the economists, the guys that have the background and experience and been up there for a long time. And then leadership, you know, says, we're on this track to reduce taxes, state income taxes, corporate income taxes. And this is where we'd like to be in the first year of the biennium, and this is where we'd like to be in the second year. How much revenue is that going to bring to us? And then they look at that, and if the numbers are going to meet the base budget plus any anticipated growth in population and inflation, then bingo, you know, we're going to go with that tax rate. So they've been able to reduce taxes on a regular basis for some time now.
It's amazing.
My freshman year, we reduced it both years, and then in this budget is going to reduce it both years as well. So the current budget is about $29.8 billion for 23-24, and then 25-26 will be $30.9 billion, which is, what is that, 4-5% increase. You know, and again, your population grows, your inflation, your budget's probably going to grow some.
So they're sort of offsetting each other. The population, in theory, gives you more tax,
people. Yep,
and inflation takes more of that money.
Yep, that's right. So it's kind of a balancing act in there. And I'm not involved in that part of the process, so you know, I don't know exactly how the sausage is made there. But I'll give you some of the highlights of the budget. Number one, it grows the rainy day fund some, not as much as it has the last probably 4 years, but it'll put over $5 billion in the rainy day fund. So that's really quite a buffer. If you have a couple of years, 2, 3, 4 years of recession, we've got the funds, you know, to take care of our needs in North Carolina regardless, okay? Compare that to, for instance, California. They are projected to have a $30 billion deficit.
Shortfall, yeah.
So they're going to have to cut $30 billion out of their budget somewhere this year.
Steve, just a quick thing on the rainy day fund. Now, going back to when we first moved here, and I guess we were really in trouble with the, what was it, the unemployment fund that we were borrowing money from the feds and paying interest on that, and we've been able to not only repay that fund, but again, avoid that interest. And so the state has really worked hard to try to be self-sustaining with that cushion.
Yeah, the Republicans, you know, traditionally are fiscal conservatives, and when they took control of both legislatures, the House and the Senate, in 2010, I think it was, North Carolina had, you know, had some issues. They had a budget deficit of over $1 billion. They owed the federal government, I think it was $2.5 billion roughly, for
the
money that they had loaned to the state for unemployment. And there were some other issues, too, with transportation and all. But they repaid all that money back. They have the rainy day fund was non-existent when they took over because all those funds had already been depleted. And so now, as I mentioned, we got $5 billion. We also have a pretty healthy stockpile in the unemployment reserve. I can't remember what that is right now, and I don't think it's in my notes, but it's pretty healthy as well. But anyhow, in addition to being in good shape with all of our, you know, the rainy day fund, the unemployment funds, the capital funds that we have, and we'll talk about them a little bit later. But we were able to give the 7.4% raise for teachers, increase the starting teacher, you know, because it's hard, it's very competitive to recruit teachers right now. There's a shortage of teachers nationwide. And so we increased the starting pay to $41,000, which was 11% over the last budget that we had. Increases, the average teacher pay in North Carolina will be $60,600 now. So we're getting more competitive. And that was the, I think, the program all along. When the Republicans took over, we knew we weren't going to catch up immediately with teacher pay and be competitive with some other states. But now in the Southeast region, we're very competitive. And by that, I mean Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, and all that. We're getting much more competitive with them. We can't obviously compete with New York, but, you know.
No, and the cost of living, cost of living is very different.
Yeah, it is much different there. So.
Steve, can I ask you just a quick question?
Mm-hmm.
When you were mentioning the reduction in the state income tax,
mm-hmm.
Obviously there are some surrounding states like Tennessee, Florida, that's not exactly surrounding, but close by, that have moved towards a zero state income tax. Is that the objective, do you think, of the Republican Party to eventually move to that? Because that would really help with your recruiting of a number of businesses. Because I have a son-in-law who works for Microsoft, and he can live anywhere, and he's looking to relocate from Florida, but he's looking only at states that have no state income tax.
And I think, you know.
So is that the objective, though, you think? Or that's
I believe that was the objective of certain people in leadership positions. I think Senator Berger, perhaps some in the House as well. I don't know that we're going to get there. I don't know that we should necessarily try to get there. Let me explain. The state budget, roughly $30 billion, about one-third of that comes from state sales tax. Okay, the state gets like 4 cents, and then the counties get some, and the cities get some. And so if you look at some of the states that have no income tax, for instance, Florida, they have a tremendous amount of coastline. They have a tremendous amount of, people that go down there on vacation all year long, but, you know, winter too. And they have a sales tax that is higher than North Carolina. And so with all the, you know, the tourism that they have down there and the higher sales tax, that's where a lot of the difference is made up.
You're a captive, you're a captive audience once you're down there.
Yeah,
that's similar to Tennessee. They have a higher sales tax than we have also.
Yeah,
they have to make up that loss of revenue.
I believe, and I haven't done it, but I bet if you did a comparison, you know, apples to apples between Tennessee and maybe even Florida, that it's really the cost of living is probably no less there. The money has to come from somewhere. $15 billion of our budget goes towards education, either university, community colleges, K through 12. And so that money has to come from somewhere. And, you know, right now, I think that probably the program's going to be to keep reducing taxes, but we're going to hit some, you know, level to where you may not be able to reduce them much anymore. Still, almost two-thirds of the budget comes from state income tax, even though they're going to continue to be reduced.
You're reducing the pain, but it won't go away totally.
Yeah,
but it does bring up an interesting philosophical issue, and that is to what extent one advantage of relying more on sales taxes, everybody pays it.
That's true.
Nobody can escape it.
Yeah.
When you have income tax, then the people who are employed are the ones that shoulder the burden. So if you have people on welfare, and you have people mm-hmm. who have
working under the table.
Working under the table, and so on, so forth. You don't capture those people.
The underground economy pays sales tax.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
It doesn't pay income tax,
mm-hmm.
and that in that sense, it's more fair.
Yeah, I agree. And if in North Carolina, if you mm-hmm. don't make over $26,500, you don't pay any, you know, income tax, state income tax anyhow,
right,
so
right.
probably any federal income tax as well. So, yeah, I would argue that the sales tax is probably a fair tax.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has to pay it. You can't get around it.
Yeah, the underground economy is subject mm-hmm. to the sales tax.
Plus you have like places like Amazon where you have a lot of items being brought into the state. Now, I believe the state's collecting sales tax from that type of internet sales. Is that not correct, Steve?
That program just started a couple of years ago,
I think. Maybe when I was working, it's ages ago, we had soft sales tax states and harder sales tax states that were willing to collect from out-of-state sales. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say it's an administrative addition, but it's fair taxation. Thank you for staying with us. This is the CCTA Wake-Up Call.
Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. East 70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Welcome back.
Okay, in addition to some of the pay raises that we talked about, the principals and non-certified school staff, people that work in the schools that aren't teachers, employees got 7% pay raise, 7% for the University of North Carolina system, community colleges also, 11% for highway patrol. And, you know, I mean, in this day and age, I can't even imagine what it'd be like to be a highway patrolman, pulling somebody over at 2 o'clock in the morning. You're by yourself on a county road in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's just a very, very dangerous job. And so we felt like they needed a little bit higher bump than some other folks. We appreciate what everybody does. Retired state employees got a 4% cost of living bonus. And this is something I think that's relatively new, but $40 million for salary increases for hard-to-fill state employee positions. It's just some positions that are very hard to fill, you know, certain auditor positions and all that. So if you try to recruit them in this, you know, very competitive environment, you just won't get them for what the state is generally able to pay. And so that might give them a little bit of a extra bump in their salary, so make us more competitive. Again, this budget will reduce personal income taxes to 3.99% in 2026, which I believe gives us the lowest state income tax of any state that has a state income tax. You know, there's obviously some that don't have income taxes. Again, I believe if you compare it apples to apples, I'm not sure that the ones that don't have it aren't paying across the board as much as what you pay here when you look at county taxes and other things. So I think we're very competitive there.
And again, Steve, you said that there's a floor of what, $26,000 before you even start?
Yep, $26,500 you do not pay. And ours is a flat state income tax. It doesn't matter what you make. It's all going to be the same rate, which
should be.
Mm-hmm, I think so, too. This the way they have it in some states, I was looking at New York earlier today, and they've got about 10 categories, you know, going up to 12% if you make over $500,000 or whatever in state income. That's a lot of state income tax. You know, when you start talking about 12%. Here's something I'm kind of patting myself on the back for, because I brought in a bill that would reduce the state what they call privilege tax, and it's really a nuisance tax. And so it didn't make it through the process of legislation, but everybody wanted to see it happen, but it just, the time ran out, so they stuck it in the budget. And so it eliminates the state privilege tax, which you know, people like realtors, builders, CPAs, lawyers, professional people have to pay. It's only $50 a year, but it's a nuisance. You have to
the privilege to do business here.
Yeah, even the name of it, privilege tax, is ridiculous. But the cost, and you couldn't pay it online. You had to fill out an application and mail it in. They didn't have the computer software set up to take a online payment or anything like that. So it's just a pain, you know, and a lot of people forget about them. The amount that it costs them to process the privilege tax probably cost about as much as the privilege tax brought in. And so,
now, is that gone or?
That's gone. Yep. For most people. Now, there are certain banks that do business, interstate type banks, like for Wells Fargo, you know, and some of the big banks like that, they'll have to continue paying it. But for your average, you know, small business and all, they don't have to pay it anymore. We did, and this is kind of in the budget, but not in the budget, we allowed everybody to qualify for some of the opportunity scholarships. And, you know, if you're making $500,000 a year, you're not going to get, you know, you might get $1,500 towards your child going to a private school or religious school. But, you know, we did extend it to where anybody would qualify. We felt like everybody paid taxes, so everybody should qualify for, you know.
So it's not just it's not just a needs-based thing. It is, as you said, within reason.
Yeah, it's on a sliding scale depending on your income, but we feel like, you know, we're going to continue on that track, increasing the amount of money. And I had an interesting conversation yesterday when I was coming home from Raleigh. I was stopped at Chick-fil-A, my favorite place to dine, in LaGrange. And somebody came up to me and saw my license plate, and his wife was a retired school teacher. And they asked me, you know, how I felt about these opportunity scholarships. And I said, well, I supported them wholeheartedly. And he said, well, my wife's a public school teacher. I said, well, I support public schools as well. I mean, we have to have both. And you know, you have to be open-minded to the fact that public schools have to take every child. You know, private schools do not. They don't. Private school doesn't have to take a special needs kid. So, you know, they're at a certain disadvantage when it comes to educating children. But at the same time, public schools aren't for every child. And so I think it's a win-win doing it the way that we're doing it.
Do you anticipate, Steve, that in the future that the General Assembly would consider adding homeschoolers to that program? The reason being, I think I had mentioned that when you look at the numbers, there's 162,000 homeschoolers and there's 128,000 private schoolers as of, I think, 2020, 2020, I'm not exact which year. But the point, my point is that homeschoolers actually represent a bigger percentage. And I know that you made some changes, so, but I'm just wondering, is there any hope that perhaps in the future that homeschoolers will be considered as legitimate people to get, again, as you said before, mm-hmm. they're paying taxes and they're having a lot of expenses. They can't work because they're homeschooling. So anyway, and some states have vouchers. They don't call them opportunity scholarships. They call them vouchers that follow the children from place to place, regardless of where you go. But is there any hope that that might happen?
I would say absolutely yes.
Good.
I know there was some discussion on that topic this past session that just, you know, didn't get there, ran out of time, so to speak. But I would think that that's going to come up again.
Good.
Go ahead, Bob. You're going to.
No, I was going to say, so it's not totally sidelined.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and appreciate hearing that.
There's, you know, in this budget, we've put in money for what we call tier one counties. Tier one counties are, I don't like to use the word poor necessarily, but they generally have a small tax base. A lot of the rural agricultural type counties. I mean, we're kind of surrounded by some of them with Jones and Pamlico and
Pasquotank.
Yeah, you know, there's about half the counties in the state are probably tier one. And it's
one that don't have also a manufacturing base or some other.
It's more agriculture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, agricultural land is typically pays, you know, county property taxes at a much lower rate. And that's just the way the system's set up. And I think it's fair and it worked good. But at the same time, there are challenges in the tier one counties that, you know, you don't see in counties like, you know, Wake County and Mecklenburg and some of the areas that are growing much, much faster. You know, probably 40% of the counties in the state aren't growing in population. You know, so most of your growth seems to be in the bigger urban areas, and that's, you know, a trend that, you know, is not just in North Carolina, but it's in other states as well. And so we try to look out for the counties that are struggling, you know, to provide adequate educational facilities for the students. And this budget puts in $709 billion for school construction, which is typically a county, you know.
County function.
Yeah, mm-hmm. County function. You know, build schools, repair schools, and all that. But we understand that it's much more difficult. And so that money will go almost exclusively, if not exclusively to tier one type counties. Let's see.
Steve, just one follow-up on that. One of the things that's going on in Craven County schools is they have actually had a reduction of the number of students they have now compared to what they had several years ago. And my understanding is they're looking at the schools. They have, I believe, 26 schools now, mm-hmm. school buildings. Of course, they have to be maintained. And as some of the populations have dropped, you know, it may very well be that some of those schools need to be consolidated. And I know sometimes that can be difficult because people like their neighborhood schools, but they become very expensive to maintain.
Well, that's very true. And we've seen that here in Craven. I think in the mid-90s or early 90s, there were roughly 15,000 students in the public school system, and today there's, I think, around 12, could be a little bit less than that. More people are homeschooling. In addition, though, one of the biggest reasons for that is that the Cherry Point Marine Station lost a couple of naval squadrons that went to Norfolk. So, okay.
Hopefully they'll get better. Yeah,
well, I think it is getting better than there. I'm optimistic.
Do you think that the COVID epidemic and the fact that parents got to see what their kids were learning in school had anything to do with the drop of the school population?
I think there's no doubt that. I think that's, pretty anecdotal evidence is, you've seen that not just in North Carolina, but nationwide, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been an eye-opener, and also what sometimes the schools are attempting to teach as some of the new curriculum is just unsatisfactory from the parental perspective.
And we spend an awful lot of time in the General Assembly addressing some of these issues like that.
Yeah.
If we have time, we'll talk about them.
Okay. Well, again, right now we're just going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And thank you for staying with us. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in Newbern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in Newbern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in Newbern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in Newbern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, Newbern.
Welcome back. This is the CCTA Wake Up Call. Steve, I'm going to go to you again.
Okay. Well, I mean, just a lot of little loop odds and ends in the budget. $70 million for school safety grants. Again, particularly the tier one counties, probably in the world that we live in now, every school should have a resource officer in it. And I think that Sheriff Chip Hughes has done a really good job in ensuring that this happened. And I think I could be wrong, but I think they have one in every school or that's
there's a couple of schools that they've actually put two in. Mm-hmm. So that's appreciated.
So kudos to the sheriff on that.
Well, Steve, not to go too far off
on
that, but and also I think when you talk about school safety, I think there is a great awakening that says, now I know when I grew up, I could go in or out of any of the doors in the schools, and likewise anybody else could come in or out. And what we've instead had to do is I'm going to say, lock down specific doors and make sure that the people that are coming have a valid reason for being there. And I'm in support of that.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the other things that some states or jurisdictions have moved towards is arming the teachers, because the real, you know, what has happened, like in Uvalde down in Texas, was we found out that first responders and school resource people are not necessarily in the right place and not necessarily, able or willing to go in and the situations where a person that's already in there is going to be able to protect himself and the students. Mm-hmm. And some states have gone in that direction. And I haven't heard of any negative incidents about that. Have you, Steve, heard about any? You think about it's negative about it?
I haven't heard anything negative about it.
Mm-hmm. You know, with a state that, you know, supports the Second Amendment and just expanded, I guess, gun rights, that might be something that we need to consider in the future.
I wholeheartedly agree. And Representative Kidwell, as you know, he usually is one that, you know, works on any type of Second Amendment type bill, him and Representative Jay Adams. We are investing a lot of money in community colleges. I think the legislature realizes just how important our community colleges are and how flexible they can be when it comes to particularly workforce development type stuff. So we're spending an awful lot of money to try to help our community colleges. I know our community college here, I work with the Dr. Statz and the sheriff to help, along with Jim Perry, to get $10 million towards building a regional emergency services training type facility where you can have advanced training for law enforcement, fire and rescue, and so on. So I'm excited about that. The college is excited about it, and I look forward to getting them some more money to complete that, because that doesn't quite do everything that you're going to need, but it's a good start for them.
I really support that, and that's a great idea, Steve. I'm glad you're behind that, because what's been going on over the last several years is the schools, colleges, have been focusing primarily on generating more college graduates.
Absolutely.
Many of which have degrees that they don't have any specific need for in the economy.
Absolutely.
And we need more people with practical skills. I know my son runs a commercial refrigeration business in Raleigh, and he has a tough time getting technicians, and he pays them a good salary. And I think more people going into that type of skill would be more successful in their own lives and mm-hmm. solve a need that we have in our economy.
There's a shortage. I hear it all the time. There's a shortage of people in the trades.
In the trades,
across
yeah.
the board. And our community college, I think, is a leader in the state when it comes to workforce training.
You know, and I believe there were six North Carolina community colleges that were just highlighted as some of the very best in the country. And so we've got a good representation there. You know what? One other thing that I want to add about the community colleges, I know that it's blood, sweat, and tears trying to get the good professors and whatever else and keeping those costs under control. And I know the state is doing a good job. Whereas I'm going to fault many of the major colleges. They have no idea how to control expenses. They're just, let's just double costs. The community colleges have a bigger responsibility to the community.
Well, I think the easy access to federal Pell Grants mm-hmm. and all these loans that they got from the federal government, the colleges haven't had to restrict the expansion of their tuition and costs. The students have been able to get this money, and now they're turning around and saying, now there's been so much debt, now they want the rest of us
to pay it off.
For what they should not have borrowed to begin with.
If you put a chart together of the cost of college versus inflation, you will find that the
it's
cost
four times higher.
Yeah.
I did look at that the other day. It's four times higher.
I want to ask you a question. Where in the budget, what is the relationship to the budget, whatever, what happened to Medicaid expansion? Where is that?
It's in the budget. So what that does essentially is, as you know, the federal government will provide 90% of the cost for the expanded part of the Medicaid. The traditional Medicaid is paid one-third by the state, two-thirds by the federal government. But I think that North Carolina went about Medicaid expansion the right way, I do, and they did it with what's called Medicaid transformation. And Medicaid transformation makes the state allocates a certain amount of money that will go towards each Medicaid patient, okay? And so the healthcare providers that accept Medicaid patients, they have to agree to accept, we're going to take $10,000 per Medicaid patient, okay? And you're going to treat them just like you would somebody with Blue Cross Blue Shield, and you're going to keep them healthy. And if you spend more than that, then you're going to eat, you know, that. But if you spend less than that, then you get to keep,
keep
the rewards of that. And we think it's going to work fine. In fact, it is working fine so far. But because we did that, it makes North Carolina eligible for a higher reimbursement in their Medicaid patients. And it's you know, healthcare providers will get higher reimbursement than a state that doesn't have this Medicaid transformation, and it's significantly higher, to tell you the truth. Now, I know that as conservatives, we don't want to see expansion of government, but the reality is this is something that the governor wanted, the Senate wanted, they voted on Medicaid expansion. I think 48 members voted for it. I think Norm and one other member did not. Right. But it, frankly, I think it was inevitable. And we have heard rumors that the federal government may do something to force the ones, the 10 states now, and I think, that have not expanded to Medicaid to expand it. And what could they do? Oh, the federal government's got a lot of leverage when it comes to making you do some things that you don't want to do necessarily.
I also understand that this was the carrot for the governor that says you won't veto.
Well, you know, they you know, there's a lot of things in that budget that the governor did not like. I can assure you that, tons of it, but he wanted to see this happen more. Another thing, again, I know as fiscal conservatives we don't like it, but the federal government gave us $1.6 billion sign-on bonus, if you will, and I don't like to use that term, but that probably best describes it.
Well, it's out of our.
It was an incentive.
It's out of our pocket.
Of course, it is. Now, you could sit here and, you know, we could throw around, and I have a little bit of an introspective on, you know, healthcare because I've been on our hospital board for some time, and we're a nonprofit hospital, and so we take every patient that comes in there. If you've got have a heart attack and go in there and need a quadruple bypass, we're going to treat you just as good as the person that's got Blue Cross Blue Shield. And it may be, you know, a $200,000 that we don't get reimbursed for if you don't have some type of, you know, insurance. And so I could talk on this topic for a long, long time. But it is in the budget, and so it is in effect now.
When we come back, I want to ask you about...
Well, we've got a whole nother minute, so...
Okay, well, I know, but he's not going to be able to deal with this.
I'll have to come back, because I got a lot of other things I'd like to talk about, so work me back on as soon as you can.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When we get back after break, I would like to have you talk a little bit about what happened this year with casinos.
Okay.
And where that stands and everything that went on, because I think there are a lot of people who don't really understand what went on and what happened and would like to know.
So am I allowed to use that as a teaser?
Absolutely.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes. And thank you for staying with us. And we're asking you to hear from our sponsors and supporters.
Tor-
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Thank you again for listening to our sponsors. Steve, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think you wanted to hit something, highlight something, and we'll talk about that briefly, and then I can, you know, go back to the budget or whatever you want to talk about.
I know there was a lot of discussion this year about more casinos in North Carolina, and I would just like you to please fill us in on the discussion, the pros, the cons, and everything that went on.
Well, you know, that was a Senate initiative. I guess everybody knows that by now. If not, they should. But, you know, the House, at the end of the day, it passed in the House or in the Senate, and then it just didn't have the votes in the House, you know, to get it in the budget where it passed. So
to reconcile that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was. And I, while I appreciate what I believe the leaders in the Senate are trying to do, which is help the rural counties. Again, you know, a lot of the wealth is being, you know, concentrated around the big urban areas. We're doing fine here. Greenville's doing fine. But there's many a county in the state that are not. And the original proposal would put four casinos in some of the rural areas, and with the hopes that it would bring a lot of sales tax, a lot of property tax, a lot of development, and this, that, and other. And at the end of the day, the votes were not there in the House, you know, to get it over the top. So
yeah,
I think it's going to rear its head back up at some point in time. Now, we have two casinos now, and they're in, you know,
Cherokee
and the Catawba Indians, both have run, and they work out good for them. I mean, they provide pretty good jobs, but the benefits are, you know, really helpful for the Indian tribes. And there is another state-recognized Indian tribe, Lumbees, but they're not they don't have a federal recognition right now. And although it's, you know, there's some pretty hard pushing, I understand, to try to get them federally recognized. And so it's possible that that they could see one in Pembroke is where the largest concentration of Lumbee Indians are.
Is there a reason why the casinos are connected to the Indians?
You know, I'm sure there is. I can't really speak on that, though, okay.
I think it has traditionally has to do with the fact that the Indian tribes, because they were identified as recognized tribes, that they were able to develop things that other jurisdictions could not do or did not have. So they didn't need the approval. So I think that's why they went down.
On their land, they were totally in charge.
And so on and so forth, because they had not total independence, but they had more independence than a typical city or county would have. I think that's why you see them mostly centered there. Now, I don't know whether how much or if any tax money that's generated in those casinos that are on Indian land now goes to the state or not.
I'm not aware of any that goes into the state coffers.
And okay, I've looked through the budget. I've never seen the Indian reservation.
I think all of the profit. Now, the Indian tribes hire a manager to run those things, so there's some money that gets, you know, sucked off into the private sector. That's okay. There's people that are really good at running casinos.
When we were in Massachusetts, and again, we watched the casinos in Rhode Island, Rhode Island, mostly Connecticut, but again, when the casinos were founded there and they were talking about improving the area, well, really the improvement was, we're going to upgrade your fire station to watch our casino. We're going to upgrade the roadways to watch our casinos. But from the general population, they're not even involved because they bring in outside managers, they bring in outside dealers and whatever. So yeah, it's a...
It didn't turn out to be as good as it looked.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to the budget.
Okay, you know, the state realizes that there's a lot of challenges in healthcare right now. There's particularly, again, in the rural areas. There's shortages of doctors, there's shortages of nurses, there's shortages of people that are, you know, radiologists or radiology technicians and right on lab workers and so on and so forth. So the state is investing a lot of money, both in the university system and the community college system, to hire more people to train up, you know, the needed workforce. You know, the last budget that we had, I think there was $250 million in that to expand the Brody School of Medicine that will train up more positions. And in this budget, I know a lot more money went to Brody School of Medicine for physician assistants and other, you know, advanced nurse practitioners and so on and so forth. So we recognize that, and we're investing a lot of money into the health care.
Now, I know a couple of years ago that there were a few of the small regional hospitals that were taken over and then destroyed, I guess, it may be a harsh word, but they were, the facilities were physically destroyed or whatever else. Is that something the state needs to work on?
You know, again, we're investing a lot of money in the health care. But, you know, the reality is the most complicated business in the world is a hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, the regulatory, you know, processes in place, you know, from the federal government and the state government, it just makes it very, very expensive to run a hospital. And then when you look at the rural areas, you know, they have a high amount of no-pay, Medicaid, and Medicaid typically on many of the procedures doesn't pay enough to even cover the procedure. So,
and now with the open borders, you're going to have a lot more people coming in. And my understanding is that these healthcare facilities cannot turn these people away. So therefore, they have to provide the services. And it's going to put even more of a burden, don't you think, Steve?
We just don't have enough healthcare workers as it, you know, doctors, nurses.
And you know, when they talk about a shortage of beds at the hospital, it's not a shortage of beds, it's a shortage of the support for the beds. The doctors and the nurses cannot stretch to all of the beds that are there.
A lot of your doctors, recruiting physicians is very, very, very competitive. You know, you get a young physician out of a, you know, just graduating from medical school and has all this training, you know, they look at where to go. I mean, part of it is, you know, certainly quality of life, and I think, you know, we offer that for sure. But they also, if they're in the private part of the healthcare business, and they have to look at how much money they're going to make, too. I mean, where's the money? Show me the money. And so if you look at the more urban areas, more of the people there are going to have a lot of state employees, and the state insurance, you know, reimbursement is much higher than Medicare or Medicaid, you know, for a lot of procedures. And the same, you know, with Blue Cross Blue Shield, you have a lot of professional people, you have a lot of state employees that have good insurance. You get to the rural areas and you just don't have that. Yeah. So I think we've lost 11 hospitals in the past, I don't know, 8 or 10 years in North Carolina, all of them rural hospitals. So you're seeing a lot of consolidation in the healthcare industry right now. And fortunately, we have a very healthy hospital here.
Yes, we do.
In Newbern. So we're very fortunate to have that. We're also investing a lot of money in economic development, $2 billion for over 200 local water and sewer infrastructure projects. You know, again, you get, and most, a lot of this money will go towards the rural communities to help them. River Bend, I think Senator Perry worked hard, and I worked hard as well, to get them a $10 million grant to help them with some water system upgrades. Mm-hmm. Bridgeton got $1.1 million or something like that. Havelock got some money. Celeste Carnes worked hard on a project down there for Havelock. She represents that part of the Craven County. And Cairns, she corrects me when I say Carnes. Cairns, I'm sorry. If you happen to be listening, Celeste. And I know Vanceburg's got a need down there, and I hope in the next budget we'll be able to help them out with that. But We're as you've seen before, North Carolina has been ranked the number one place to open a business, the number one place to do business in the nation, and a lot of that's because of you know, I think we're doing a pretty good job as a legislature in trying to control regulations, mm-hmm. even doing away with some of the regulatory you know, problems that we have on the books now, and of course the tax structure as well. And so we're very competitive with all that, and our workforce, and our university system, and our community colleges. So when you look at the whole package, that's why we're ranked as the best place in the nation to do business.
And they're not at each other's throats normally.
Yeah,
periodically, but not normally.
I want to ask a question. You were formerly a county commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
You're very familiar with this area. What do you see the impact of all the road work that is going on right now with Route 70? And say, where do you see us in 5 years?
Well, obviously, I think the bypass around Havelock and the improvements on the 70 corridor between the Trent River and the Havelock bypass will be finished. I'm not aware of any other big projects in Craven County, but that pretty much completes it. Doesn't it? Yeah.
Because it's about 17 heading up towards
Yep, and
Little Washington.
And we'll talk about that a little bit. But as far as 70, I can't begin to tell you how important that is. Mm-hmm. And having an interstate grade road opens up an awful lot of stuff for commerce. I'll say that. If you don't have an interstate road, you're off the – you're not even in the game for a lot of
business,
you know, business and commerce.
And with the way that the Raleigh area is growing, I was up there this past weekend watching my two grandkids play some sports in Cary. and the construction of multifamily dwelling is just unbelievable how it's growing. And where are they going to go on vacation? And now, you know, if they get a nice interstate down to Morehead City and down to that area, they better get ready because they're coming.
They will be coming.
And a lot of them are moving out to Johnson County, you know, which is adjacent, and even Wayne County.
Right.
But, you know, the big clog in the wheel, cog in the wheel is going to be, I think, Lenoir County when it comes to Highway 70.
Upgrading.
They're working on that, but that one could be a ways out. I would say that's 5-10 years
right
out.
Through Kinston.
But the rest of it will be interstate grade from Havelock to all the way up to Raleigh, Interstate 95.
Can I throw out a change in topic right before we're getting towards the end, right?
Yes, we've got about a minute.
This is just something that I've been thinking about the last few days, and it may seem outlandish, but I think it should be considered. And, of course, it would take legislative action. That's why I want to bring it up while Representative Tyson's here. The public schools in North Carolina are failing. The data shows that less than 50% of the kids in the public schools are meeting grade levels in math or reading. And I believe that an alternative that needs to be considered is to redirect the ultimate authority for education from the state board of education to the local boards of education. The local boards of education are closer to the communities. They're elected by the public. They report to the public, where now we have an education system or board that is appointed by the governor and under no control by the people. End of comment.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you're not going to get a lot of argument from me on that one. So I know we're about out of time, but I look forward to coming back because there's a lot more to talk about.
Thank you, Steve, for staying with us, and we appreciate your time with us and your report on the state of the budget or the legislature. And again, this is the CCTA wake-up call. Thank you for staying with us.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Morehead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.